Our episodes deal with serious and often distressing incidents. Listener discretion is advised. Broadmoor Hospital in England is well known as the most renowned high-security psychiatric hospital in the UK. Broadmoor Hospital's catchment areas, though, do not go past its borders. For offenders in Scotland and Northern Ireland, the state hospital they would be sent to, if found mentally unsound, would be Carstairs. Constructed in 1939, Carstairs Hospital was used as a military hospital during the Second World War. The British government relinquished control of the hospital in 1948, and it was then reinstated for its original purpose, which was to become, quote, the state institution for mental defectives. On October 1, 1957, a transfer of 90 criminally insane prisoners from Her Majesty's prison in Perth was completed. This transfer, alongside the patients currently at Carstairs, led to it being renamed the State Mental Hospital. Carstairs would be home to many stories of dangerous prisoners and their time served there, but none would be as catastrophic to their reputation as Thomas McCulloch and Robert Moan.
I'm GS, and this is Skinwalker.
Thomas McCulloch was born and raised in Clydebank, just 6 miles outside of Glasgow city centre. By his late teens and into his early 20s, he was known as a user of drugs and a heavy drinker. Violent outbursts were common while he was under the influence of alcohol, but he was just as dangerous sober if his temper was to flare up. In 1970, a 22-year-old Thomas McCulloch visited the Erskine Bridge Hotel for lunch. A large hotel sat on the banks of the River Clyde, and offering a short trip to and from Glasgow Airport, it was regularly busy. As food had been brought to the table, McCulloch complained that he had not been given enough butter with his bread roll. Far angrier than he had any right to be, McCulloch stormed to the kitchen to demand to know why he had been left short. Face to face with the chef, McCulloch pulled a gun from inside his jacket and shot the chef in the face. The restaurant manageress heard the shot go off and came to investigate. McCulloch was standing in front of her, gun in hand. Without any hesitation, he then pulled a second gun from his jacket, aimed at the manageress, and shot. The shot tore through her shoulder as she fell to the floor. Police arrived at the scene, and after McCulloch had holed himself up in the restaurant for around 30 minutes, he was arrested and taken into custody. McCulloch was found to be in possession of 4 firearms at the time of his arrest. The restaurant's chef and manageress were taken to the hospital by ambulance. Both would miraculously survive the incident, although their lives would be changed forever. The manageress would never work again due to the injury to her shoulder and the mental impact the event had made on her life. The chef required reconstructive surgery to his face and many years of pain to get back to any type of normality. Thomas McCulloch was judged to be both murderous and insane and was sent to the state hospital at Carstairs. It would be there, under the noses of guards, nurses and psychiatric doctors, that he would form a deadly friendship with another patient. Robert Moan was already being held in Carstairs when Thomas McCulloch arrived in 1970. His crime had taken place 3 years before McCulloch's, in 1967. Robert Mohn had been born in Dundee in 1948, named after his father, Robert Sr., and the only boy of the family alongside his two sisters. Life was not to be straightforward for him. A dysfunctional household and regular beatings from his father had made Robert Jr. an introvert, and he struggled to establish friendships. His mother had left when he was just 2 years old, leaving him and his sisters at the brutal hands of their father with no protection. In his early teens, he was sexually abused by a neighbour, which had a huge effect on his behaviour. Throughout his years in secondary school at St John's Roman Catholic High School, Robert was a tearaway. He hated school and was deemed uncontrollable by teachers. In 1964, at the age of 15, he was expelled from St John's High School by the Marist brothers in charge. He was then sent to an approved school in London, but this was to be short-lived. For the next 2 years, Robert Mohn attempted to reconcile his relationship with his mother, who was by now living in London. She had married a property developer there and had settled down. His younger sister Frances had also moved to London to live with her mother. Frances had clicked with her mum straight away. However, rekindling their mother and child relationship hadn't been so easy for Robert. He soon moved out and had made friends in London that he would stay with without any formal sort of arrangement, becoming functionally homeless despite still being a child. In 1966, attempting to finally make something of his life, Robert Mohn joined the army. At 18 years old, he was sent to Germany with the Gordon Highlanders, an infantry regiment of the British Army. When he arrived back in Scotland, it seemed that Mohn had developed a taste for drink. Army culture at the time involved heavy drinking, and it appeared that he had gotten into the swing of things in his time in Germany. It was in late October of 1967 that he had arrived back in Dundee, and after that, he was seen drunken in pubs from open till close. He would spend his time in between, whiling away the hours until they would open again. He was supposed to have been back at the army barracks and reporting for duty, but instead, he was in a cycle of heavy drinking and wandering the streets of Dundee. Depressed and feeling the effects of his drinking, Robert Mohn attempted to take his own life by overdosing on medication, but it failed, only leaving him ill and even more depressed at his failure in this attempt. On November 1st, Robert Mohn was drinking heavily once more. He had gone AWOL from the army after his failed suicide attempt and had decided to turn to what he knew best, drink. Stepping outside of the pub after several hours of drinking, Robert Mohn looked across the street to his old school. The weather was miserable. It was cold and rainy. Along with the drinking and looking over at the school which had expelled him years earlier, a rage was growing inside of Robert Mohn. He returned to the hotel he had been staying in, but he was back outside not long after. Walking down the street in his full Gordon Highlanders uniform, he carried a long object which he had wrapped in paper. It would appear that he was heading back to the pub, but instead, he crossed the road and entered St John's High School. Nanette Hansen, a teacher from Yorkshire, had recently moved to Dundee and had gained employment at St John's. Nanette had been married to her husband Guy for 6 months, and the pair had only recently found out that she was pregnant. She was teaching her all-girls class of needlework when the classroom door swung open. Robert Mohn walked in slowly as he looked around the classroom. The room fell silent as both teacher and students wondered exactly what was going on. girls started to giggle, believing that a practical joke was taking place. But the laughs disappeared when Robert Moan ripped the paper off of the object he was holding to reveal a double-barreled shotgun that he'd recently purchased. Moan screamed at everyone in the class to get against the walls and warned them that he had enough ammunition for every single one of them. He then ordered them into an adjoining room at the back of the class, which had no other doors other than the one which they had entered through. Six of the girls were ordered to move desks in front of the door to stop anyone from entering, but the commotion from inside the room and the sobbing of the young girls had alerted another teacher. Margaret Christie knocked on the door to find out what was going on. Without warning, Robert Moan fired his shotgun into the ceiling of the classroom as a message to anyone trying to enter. Margaret Christie raised the school alarm and all pupils were evacuated from the school, all except from the needlework class which Robert Moan was continuing to terrorise. Moan had pointed the shotgun at some of the girls' heads who he had felt had been crying too loud. Seeing that her students were terrified, Nanette Hansen attempted to start a conversation with Robert Moan. Meanwhile, police were outside of the school almost immediately, and by the time they were camped outside of her classroom, Nanette had managed to reach an agreement with Robert Moan. The only person that Moan wanted to see and talk to was an old acquaintance named Marion Young. He hadn't seen Marion in over 3 years, but he claimed that she understood him. Knowing that police would be attempting to negotiate the release of the children and herself, Nanette made a deal with Moan that if she could arrange for Marion to be brought to the school to speak with him, that he would have to let the pupils go. Moan agreed. Nanette Hansen passed the information to police outside of her classroom as they set to work on tracing Marion Young. And it didn't take long. An 18-year-old student nurse in Dundee with that name was found, and when they arrived at the hospital, she confirmed she had known Robert Moan. When the situation was explained, without hesitation, Marion agreed to go with them to the school and attempt to talk down the man she had once known. During this time, Moan had continued to terrorise the classroom. An attempt had been made by police to enter the room, but Moan had fired straight at the door when they approached, forcing them to retreat. Moan had also brought 3 girls out into the classroom, where he kissed one and sexually assaulted the other two. At one point, he pointed the gun straight at one of the girls' heads and pulled the trigger, but it jammed, sparing the young girl's life. Marion arrived at the school, just over an hour since the entire siege had begun in the needlework classroom. As she walked in, Moan asked her, "How did you know I wouldn't shoot you?" Ignoring his threat, Marion and Nanette both tried to gently reason with him, but Moan repeatedly pointed the gun straight at their faces and became aggressive. They pleaded with him that he now had to let the girls go. Sat on the teacher's desk, it seemed as though Moan had lost interest in the whole thing. Nanette Hansen ushered the girls out of the classroom as Robert Moan stared into space. As she was getting the last of her students out, he then shouted, "Not you. You're not going. I want you here." It was now just the 3 of them left, and at one point, while Nanette was talking to Moan, Marion seen a chance. He had become distracted and had left the shotgun lying on the desk. She tried to grab it, but Moan's hands were back on it before hers as he then pointed it back at her, jabbing it into her chest. The longer his siege inside of the classroom was going on, Moan had begun to get paranoid that police snipers would be attempting to take him down, and he wasn't wrong. Tom Jowett, a detective sergeant in Dundee, was on a rooftop opposite the school with Moan in his sights. He had stated to his superior that he had the shot, but with the two women in the classroom, it was deemed too much of a risk and the shot was not authorised. Around 4:30pm, Tom Jowett was still trained on Moan, still asking for authorisation to take the shot, but to no reply. Robert Moan instructed Nanette Hansen to close the window blinds, and as she closed them, with her back turned to Moan, he fired the shotgun at point-blank range into her back. Nanette fell to the floor as Marion rushed to her side. Her injuries were severe, but she was still breathing. After the gunshot, police stormed the room along with paramedics. They may have been expecting a shootout with the armed Robert Moan, but instead, they found him sitting on one of the classroom desks, singing. He was then apprehended without any struggle, while he smiled at the officers arresting him. Nanette was rushed to the Dundee Royal Infirmary, but the shot proved too much and she died whilst in the hospital. In 1968, Robert Moan went on trial for the murder of Nanette Hansen. He would never plead guilty to the crime though. After being diagnosed as schizophrenic, he was found insane and unfit to plead. There was only one place now for him to be sent, Carstairs State Hospital. He was sentenced to be detained there without limit of time. Nanette Hansen received an Albert Medal posthumously for her extraordinary bravery, and Marion Young received a George Medal for gallantry in the Queen's Honours that year. Robert Moan's time in Carstairs was very different to his years growing up. He had embraced learning while inside. He gained his A-levels, which he had missed out on as a young boy, and began a long-distance law degree. He had even managed to get a job inside the hospital for the Carstairs Hospital magazine, writing regular features. For all intents and purposes, Robert Moan had been beginning to look like a model prisoner. The only concern that guards had around him was his obsession around a fellow prisoner, Thomas McCulloch. Since McCulloch's arrival in 1970, the pair had formed a strong friendship, and rumours were strongly circulating that they had a sexual relationship. One thing that was clear though, was that Thomas McCulloch was the one in charge. Robert Moan hung on his words and did whatever he asked. McCulloch was known to be obsessed with Nazi ideology and symbols. He was also manipulative both with patients and guards, and this was especially true when it came to his friend Robert Moan. In 1976, 6 years on from McCulloch's incarceration, the pair's relationship continued. Although their relationship had worried guards, there had been no real cause for concern, as nothing out of the ordinary had taken place. Under their noses though, Thomas McCulloch had been plotting, and Robert Moan was firmly on board with his plan. For 6 months, the pair played the role of model patients. Moan continued to write for the hospital magazine, and the pair had joined a drama group which was being run by nursing officer Neil McClellan. McCulloch had nominated himself to create and prepare props for the drama group, a job that allowed him to remove items for his secret plan. Stating that he was preparing props for a Christmas drama, in a cupboard inside the hospital, he managed to amass disguises and weaponry. 2 wire garrottes made from guitar strings, an axe, 3 knives which McCulloch decorated with SS symbols, a rope ladder, uniforms, and fake beards and moustaches were being stored right under guards' noses as Thomas McCulloch was setting up their escape from Carstairs. Robert Moan, his job at the hospital magazine, had managed to create fake IDs for the pair. On November 30, 1976, McCulloch had told Moan to be ready, as this was the day they would put their plan into action. It was a miserable, rainy and dark night. Nursing officer Neil McClellan had come to collect the pair around 5 p.m. from their cells. McClellan was actually off duty by this point, but knew the pair were working on the magazine and the drama props, so he had come back to work to allow them time to do this. Thomas McCulloch had brought along with him a large box. Neil McClellan had assumed that this box contained props for the upcoming play which they had been working on. It was of Mice and Men, a story of two migrant ranch workers during the Great Depression. The wooden guns they had for this play weren't the only weapons inside the box. Around 6 p.m, Neil McClellan was talking to a fellow patient, Ian Simpson. Everybody else had gone from the room, leaving only the four men. From inside the box, the pair removed paint stripper, which they then proceeded to throw in the faces of McClellan and Ian Simpson. Robert Moan had thought that with paint stripper thrown in their faces, the pair would be incapacitated and they would be able to grab the keys and run. He hadn't counted on both men fighting for their lives once they realised they had been attacked. Thomas McCulloch hadn't hesitated to ensure their escape plot remained on though. He pulled out the axe which he had been storing and hacked at Ian Simpson's skull. McCulloch then pulled out one of the three knives he had and slashed at nursing officer McClellan. He continued to do so even after it appeared that his victim had passed. Ian Simpson, even after his vicious attack, was still alive. He lay on the ground groaning. Robert Moan noticed that a pitchfork had fell to the ground in the struggle. After retrieving it, he stood above Simpson and speared the pitchfork through his chest. Satisfied that both of the men were finally dead, Thomas McCulloch wasn't going to leave without a trophy. He bent down over Ian Simpson, and with the knife, he cut off both of the man's ears. Robert Moan had grabbed the keys from Neil McClellan's belt, and the pair were finally outside of the hospital. The rope ladder that McCulloch had been making as part of his task for the drama group was then used to scale the perimeter fence. Once they had made it over, the pair donned their disguises of nurses' uniforms and fake beards. They planned to flag down a car, which they would then steal. Robert Moan lay down on the ground where he would pretend to be a victim of an accident, and McCulloch walked further down the road to flag down the first car that passed for help. The pair seen headlights coming along the road towards them and seen their chance. McCulloch waved his arms for the vehicle to stop, and it ground to a halt. The man inside stepped out of the vehicle to help, but just as he did, another car pulled up behind him. This time, it was a police car. PC John Gillies and PC George Taylor were on a routine patrol through the area when they had seen McCulloch at the side of the road. They had stopped to help what looked like an injured man, but the situation soon turned to fighting for their own lives. PC Taylor had walked towards Moan, but behind him, Thomas McCulloch attacked PC Gillies with a knife. Robert Moan brandished the axe at PC Taylor, hoping that it would serve as a warning to which the officer would run. PC Taylor was a large man though, much larger than Robert Moan, and wasn't going to back down. The officer lunged at Moan. He grabbed him and was pinning him down to the ground, but Moan was still swinging wildly with the knife he had. Officer Taylor suffered slashes to his head and body, as well as being stabbed several times. Moan had managed to free himself from his grip to to find that the other police officer had managed to escape from McCulloch and run off. McCulloch and Moan hopped into the police car and set off to get further away from Carstairs to avoid being caught. PC John Gillies was taken to hospital and survived, but unfortunately, George Taylor died at the scene from his injuries as he was left at the roadside. While the pair were escaping in the police car, the gruesome events inside Carstairs were only being discovered by another nurse almost an hour later. John Hughes entered the social room where Neil McClellan had been with Ian Simpson, Thomas McCulloch and Robert Moan. As he opened the door, he seen Neil McClellan lying dead on the ground. As Hughes bent over McClellan to check on him, he felt a drip on his shoulder. The attack had been so violent that McClellan's blood was dripping from the ceiling. When Hughes noticed that the keys had been cut from his fellow nursing officer's belt, he knew exactly what was going on and raised the alarm. Initially, he had thought that all three patients had been involved when he reported to the central nursing office and stated, "Moan, McCulloch and that bastard Simpson have murdered Neil and escaped." When he discovered that a small room adjoined to the main office was locked, he believed all three men were hiding inside. He forced his way in, ramming the door. He had broken the lock, but something was pushed against the door, and after pushing in past this, he discovered Ian Simpson's body. Not only had Simpson's ears been cut off, but McCulloch had scalped him and left the remains sitting on the office chair. Years later, when talking about the pair, John Hughes said, "They were both very plausible characters. They would never get into conflict with nursing staff. If you chastised them, they would apologise and back away, but they could manipulate people very easily." He went on to say, "They had been given a lot of freedom. They were being rehabilitated for the outside world, but in actual fact, they led psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, nursing staff and therapists down the garden path. They conned everybody into believing they were on the mend." While those at the hospital were now scrambling to try and find McCulloch and Moan on sight, the two escapees were driving off in their stolen police car. Robert Moan had been broadcasting false reports over police radios in an attempt to throw them off their scent. Not long after speeding off, McCulloch's erratic driving almost put an end to their attempt at fleeing. Driving fast in the pouring rain, McCulloch lost control of the vehicle after hitting ice on the road and crashed into a ditch. Now bleeding from the car crash and soaking wet from their escape, the pair were hurt but still able to climb out of the car. A workman's van had seen the car veer off the road and had pulled up to help its passengers. Thomas McCulloch, thinking on his feet, impersonated a police officer and shouted to the two men who had gotten out that he needed help with his prisoner. The two men, William Lennon and Jack McElroy, were none the wiser of what had happened just 15 minutes earlier and thought that they were helping when McCulloch turned on them both. McCulloch stabbed at both men with one of the knives, and Moan quickly jumped up to do the same. Severely injured, the two men were then thrown into the back of their own work van, while McCulloch took to the driver's seat. A short while later, McCulloch's paranoia seen him divert their journey. He had seen lights ahead and presumed that a roadblock had been set up. He drove the van off the road and into a field. Due to the weather, the field was soft and muddy, and not long after entering it, the van was stuck. They had reached the town of Roberton, and ahead of them in the field was a farmhouse. The pair made their way to the front door and knocked. Once the door was opened by the farmer who owned the house, Thomas McCulloch burst in. He grabbed the farmer and wrestled with him, screaming at him to give him the keys to his car. Robert Moan walked past the two men scuffling and made his way to the living room. In there, a mother and her four children who had been watching TV looked on terrified at the two men who had entered their home. Every encounter that the pair had had so far had ended in bloodshed and violence, but luckily for the family inside Townfoot Farm, their focus was firmly on escaping and getting further away. Once they had the keys to the family's car, they were back on their way. The farmer immediately phoned police to alert them to what had just happened, and once they arrived, it didn't take them long to discover William Lennon and Jack McElroy in the back of the van. Now the police knew what type of car the pair were travelling in, and the direction they had sped off in. The report was put out. Officers patrolling the A74, the motorway connecting Scotland and England, spotted the car being driven at high speed, going south. Several police cars joined in pursuit, as the pair would doubtlessly have seen their chances of escaping closing in. Now south of the border, they entered Carlisle. One of the police cars tailing the pair made the decision to ram the vehicle. Once the hit was made, McCulloch once again lost control of a vehicle as they skidded into a roundabout. The car was done. The hit had made it undrivable, but the two inside were still moving. McCulloch and Moan ran to a car that had stopped next to the accident and ordered the man inside to get out of his car. As he did so, he grabbed the keys from the ignition and ran. By the time the pair sat in the car and attempted to drive without the means to do so, police swooped in. Their capture put an end to an escape that had left three men murdered and another three seriously injured. Added to this, the Craig family who lived in the farmhouse in Roberton were left terrified by the events which had happened inside of their home. In 1977, their trial took place at Edinburgh High Court. In extremely short proceedings for the type of case, both men pled guilty. Robert Moan was convicted of murdering PC George Taylor, while Thomas McCulloch was convicted of murdering both Neil McClellan and Ian Simpson. Both men were sentenced for the rest of their natural lives. This was a time when life meant life, and if authorities had their way, neither of these men would see outside of a prison wall ever again. When they were sent to jail, authorities made sure that they were split. Thomas McCulloch was sent to Peterhead Prison in Scotland's northeast, while Robert Moan would serve his time in Perth Prison. After the events of 1976, the name of Robert Moan in Scotland was well known for the brutal events that had taken place at Carstairs Hospital in what the public viewed as a sickening series of crimes. One person who didn't have the same view as the rest of Scotland, though, was Robert Moan Sr. The man who had abused his son through childhood now had a longing to meet him again and be with his son. Robert Sr., going by the name Sonny, had remarried and had told his second wife Mary that he wanted to do one better than his son and one day join him inside prison. On another occasion, while down at his local pub, he stated to his drinking companions that he would do something that would make him more notorious than his son, who he referred to as the Carstairs Killer. In December 1978, Sonny Moan showed that his drinking ways had not changed. He was still known locally to be violent when drunk, and after causing trouble in a local establishment, he had received a £10 fine for breach of the peace. In early January 1979, a missing persons report was made for a resident of the Hilltown area of Dundee. Agnes Waugh. A 78-year-old woman was well known in the area and hadn't been seen for almost a week. Her front door had been left lying open. Inside, her gas fire was still on, but there was no sign that she was there. Police began a door-to-door search, asking residents from the area for any information. In a ground floor flat on Kinghorn Street, the home of Jane Simpson, police hadn't received an answer to several knocks, but there was a familiar smell coming from the flat. Jane was a friend of Agnes Waugh. Police forced their way inside and discovered the dead bodies of three women. Three women who had clearly been dead for some time and left. Agnes Waugh and Jane Simpson had both had their wrists strapped with strips from plastic carrier bags. They had then been savagely beaten before being strangled by their own stockings. The third woman was discovered to be 29-year-old Catherine Miller, a local girl who had become friendly with the pair. She had been married just 6 days earlier and was also a reported missing person, as her husband hadn't seen her since the 29th of December. Catherine had been strangled by an electric cable, which had been left around her neck. Agnes Waugh had been punched so hard in the face that a mark had been made by a distinctive ring which the killer had worn, and police were now looking for the owner of that ring. Anyone with a connection to the three women was questioned in a bid to find the killer. Sonny Moan was discovered to be the nephew of Agnes Waugh. Sonny told police that he had been in the flat that afternoon with the three women, but that he had left them in the presence of another man. When that man confirmed that they had been in the house, but that it had been the other way around, and he had left Sonny Moan with the three women, the spotlight started to shine on Sonny Moan. Unable to find concrete evidence that he was responsible for the crime, it was reports of those questioned that had given them another reason to focus in on him. Since the brutal events of 1976, Sonny had liked to boast about his son's crimes. He had also shown people the ring his son had once worn, and it was now his. Sonny was regularly seen wearing the silver ring with a large green jade. However, when questioned by the police, this ring had been removed. Police had arranged search warrants, but after searches, had been unable to locate it. With circumstantial evidence and mounting rumours that Sonny Moan was responsible, police made the decision to arrest and charge him with the murders. When Sonny was arrested, he inadvertently gave police the evidence they had tried so hard to find. He had chosen to wear the ring that day, the ring that matched the imprint left on the face of his aunt, Agnes Waugh. Sonny Moan had been a detested character in Dundee. People had come forward to give information against him, which quickly formed a picture of the man police were dealing with. A local bully who had tried to pick fights with men of lesser size. He had been known as a thief, and the abuse of his partner and family were also well known. Sonny had a love for tattoos. One of the tattoos he had was the letters IHS across his chest. He had told people that this stood for In His Service in reference to the devil. Another was the letters TNT, which he had had tattooed on his penis, and he was all too quick to flash at others. On the 29th of December, he had been thrown out of two pubs for violent behaviour before heading to the flat of Jane Simpson. When he had been asked if he had committed the murders, he hadn't fully denied it either, instead going on a rant to police about his son. In June 1979, at the High Court in Dundee, Sonny Moan went on trial for all three murders. It took the jury just over 1 hour to reach a verdict. Robert Moan Sr. was found guilty of all three murders. he was sentenced to a minimum of 15 years behind bars. As the sentence was read out, Sonny showed no remorse and shouted to the judge, "Would you mind backdating it?" Now that he was behind bars, his partner Mary came forward to state her relief that she was now free of the man she had lived in fear of through their time together. She had left her home in Glasgow to move to Dundee with Sonny, but after their honeymoon period was over, the true man began to reveal himself. A violent drunk, Sonny had attempted to strangle her 3 times. She stated that he had an obsessive hatred of women and had promised to murder a woman, claiming that police would never be able to trace it back to him. Mary and her daughters had lived in fear that they themselves may have become the victims of Sonny Moan due to his violent streak. Sonny was sent to Craig Inch's prison in Aberdeen, intentionally separated from his son, who had been the reason he had committed his crimes. His time inside prison was similar to his time in the Hilltown area of Dundee. He took up yoga classes and impressed some with his shoulder pull-ups. However, inmates quickly worked him out. He was a bully, picking on younger and smaller inmates by intimidating them with his tattoos and strength. Not long after arriving, he was quickly detested by those around him, just as he had been before his time in prison. On January 13, 1983, Sonny Moan was now 55 years old. 3.5 years had been spent in prison, but his swagger and own self-importance had remained. Sonny was standing drinking a cup of tea in the main workshop area of the prison on a break. Anthony John Curry, a 39-year-old fellow prisoner, had enough of Sonny Moan. He ran into the workshop carrying 2 knives and headed straight for him. He stabbed him in the neck and the attack continued. Sonny fought for his life, but Curry slashed at his head and back as he tried to shield himself. Sonny died at the scene as prison guards eventually managed to break up the fight. In 2002, like many other cases in Scotland, European human rights laws meant that both Thomas McCulloch and Robert Moan would have their sentences reviewed. Robert Moan's sentence was then set at 25 years, meaning that he would soon be available for parole, while McCulloch's sentence was set at 30 years, so he would have to wait a few more before it would be available to him. In 2005, Thomas McCulloch's behaviour had seen his prisoner status downgraded and he was being prepared for a move to Castle Huntly, an open prison which would allow him unsupervised outings. Robert Moan was still languishing in prison while things were starting to look up for McCulloch. In 2007, a pre-release programme was being worked out for Moan. He completed a violence prevention programme, which is mandatory for any murderer to do before release. He had 2 escorted outings to Crieff and Edinburgh, which had gone without any hiccups, and if he could complete 2 more, then he would be able to apply for an outside work placement. Newspapers had got wind of this, and the public protested against this once it came to light that Robert Moan was being prepared for freedom. The prison service backed down as these talks quietened and Robert Moan never managed to find an outside work placement. In 2010, plans were in place for Thomas McCulloch to be released and rehoused in the Dumbarton area, the same side of Glasgow where he had grown up. These plans had to be scrapped though, after locals found out that he was being released into their area. Death threats were made towards McCulloch, stating that if he was seen around Dumbarton, he would not be leaving alive. Throughout his unsupervised visits from Castle Huntly, Thomas McCulloch had met a woman named Susan Perry, a 48-year-old woman from Dundee with 3 children. She had been having an affair with McCulloch while he was still in prison. Her husband, James Fallon, had found out about their secret meetups and had divorced Susan just before Thomas McCulloch was finally released in early 2011. Susan's family were furious when they found out that the man she was now with was a convicted murderer and had spent several years inside Carstairs State Hospital. Her son Andrew participated in an interview with a national newspaper to state his disgust at their relationship. Susan's first husband, Andrew Perry, was a heroin addict who had died at the age of 39 after a long battle with AIDS. Her second husband, James Fallon, had been an alcoholic. This led Andrew to state in the interview, "Mum's went from a junkie to an alkie and now a murderer. I'm ashamed and embarrassed." But despite her family's protestations and turning their back on her, Susan remains with McCulloch to this day, where they live in Dundee. Robert Moan, however, has never been freed and is now Scotland's longest serving prisoner, serving his time at HMP Glenochle. He has been involved in several incidents inside prison that his rehabilitation has been drawn into question and parole has yet to be granted. Amongst his misdemeanours while inside are staging a rooftop riot in Perth Prison and an incident where he attacked a fellow inmate with boiling water. The latter was an attack that earned him an extra 6 months onto his sentence. Moan himself was so convinced that he would be a free man, he changed his name to James Smith and told guards that he would settle down in the town of Oban on Scotland's west coast once he's freed. Back in 2015, Robert Moan had sent letters to a journalist detailing the events of the night of 1976. Although it differed slightly from the official inquiry, Moan stated that it was a terrifying night, describing it as a nightmare of shattered dreams and grotesque maniacal butchery. He claims that Thomas McCulloch was the driving force behind the escape and that he had followed McCulloch's lead. He recalls officers telling them that part of Thomas McCulloch's plan after they had escaped was to leave no witnesses behind and murder him as his final act. Further letters were uncovered that Robert Moan had been sending to a pen pal who he wanted to start a relationship with. In these letters, Moan never once mentioned his crimes, but spoke candidly about his upcoming release and childhood. He stated to his pen pal that he would be able to help him reintegrate into society and thinks that by the two of them being together, it would make everything look more stable, which would go a long way in getting him released. He then goes on to say that it's sweet that his pen pal's mother supports his homosexuality, but asks him not to disclose who he is dating so as they can keep the relationship private for now. Opening up about his childhood, he tells his pal about his neighbour when he was 12 years old. Stating that his virginity wasn't offered, it was simply taken. In the letters he says that he continued to keep the relationship with his neighbour going, as well as meeting up with his friends until he was 14 years old. He then began an affair with his school's deputy headmaster and other married men. When he was in London, he stated that he was drugged and driven to a quiet location where he was forced to participate in a gay porn film shoot. The drugs had messed with his short-term memory and caused him flashbacks for months afterwards. Speaking of his time in London, he says that he tried to rekindle the relationship with his mother, who had abandoned him when he was 2 years old, but that she was more interested in her new partner. He believes that she also had problems with his sexuality before he decided to move out. He then developed a serious drinking problem and dealt with clinical depression before trying to take his own life by an overdose. He was living with a 50-year-old man who he named as Kensington Jack, who helped him out while he slept around with men in London before he then made his decision to return to Scotland and join the army, a decision which he thought would reform him and give him purpose. But instead, it was the beginning of a journey that would affect countless lives.